You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Fired up. Fantasy Sports Today, the Saturday edition. I feel like it's been a while since I've been on. So hopefully you're listening, getting ready for your Saturday. I wish I could say it's a beautiful Saturday morning, but, you know, I live in the Northeast, and it has not been beautiful here for a very long time. I got a chance to get away from that. I was in San Antonio last weekend. I called in, talked to my buddy K-Dubs, who I'm going to bring on here in a second. We talked about the Final Four, which I attended, championship game, which I attended. It was all good stuff and fun stuff down there. So I'm happy to be back, and we have a lot on the slate today. You know, you get through the doldrums of the sports season after the Super Bowl ends, it's always a little bittersweet, and you're like, oh, what the hell are we going to talk about? But you sift your way through it. You fight through March, which is a really fun month, and then here we are in April, and Kevin, we have a lot to talk about. It's baseball season. It's NFL draft season. It's the NBA and NHL playoffs are effectively getting started within a week, and not to mention that the Masters are going on and Conor McGregor is nuts. So I previewed all that in a tweet before the show, but clearly chock full of items to talk about today.
Make sure that we are entertained and have something to discuss.
Yeah, so you did the show last week with my buddy George Kurtz, who ended up drafting a team
that
he and I are going to co-manage. So far, so good. He actually, I like the George and I have a pretty similar sensibility of how to build teams, which is why I didn't really hesitate to do one with him. I think we worked together for long enough that he understands. We understand that, you know, the draft isn't going to solve any ills, and you just got to kind of work through it anyway, especially when it comes to baseball. You know, football, you're going to have injuries that are kind of going to devastate your team. But in baseball, like, you're just going to have guys on the DL, and you got to pick some people up, and they're not going to transform your team. But you got to work the waiver wire hard. George does the closer report for rotoexperts.com every week, and that's a battle in and of itself. You know, it doesn't matter who you drafted as a closer, because that guy's either going to be hurt or not the closer before too long. So George gets it, and he and I are certainly on the same page. He drafted some guys that I really like. He actually went kind of funny. He went hard with Yankees and Mets late in the draft. So he took flyers like Neil Walker and Brandon Drury, because he picked up Greg Bird, who's obviously going to be hurt for God knows how long. He got Matt Harvey, whom I like this year. So in that sense, we have a pretty good team. So so far, so good. We have a couple of guys that have produced early, and I'll take a look specifically at that as we get into the next couple of segments, because we're going to do baseball in that first hour. But
I wanted to ask you about the Final Four before we move past it, just what it was like watching them. You know, I mean, we both said, Rob, probably that Villanova was the best team. It became pretty clear once Virginia was out against the 16 seed. And, I mean, they were one of the more dominant teams I think we've seen in the last decade.
Yeah, it's absolutely one of the more dominant tournament runs in history. They won every game by 12 points or more. They won the two Final Four games by a combined, I guess it was 35 points, where they win by 18 and then 17. So I actually seen varying scores when I've looked up the Villanova Kansas game, which makes me wonder if there was a buzzer beater that I wasn't paying attention to. So anyway, they won those two games by about a combined 35 points. Neither game was all that close. Clearly, they took the air out of the ball for the last 15. The Kansas game was 22-4. It never got within double digits. And Villanova tried to run out the clock for the last 15 minutes of that game. And they scored 95 points. If they had gone full throttle, they could have put up 120. That's not an exaggeration. They were dominating. The fact that Kansas put up 77 was just because Villanova didn't really have to defend all that much. And the Monday night game, it was a good game for like 12 to 15 minutes. And then despite Michigan looking like they had outplayed Villanova, they were down at nine. They were down nine at halftime. Mo Wagner disappeared after 10 minutes. And clearly the story was Dante DiVincenzo. He completely took over the game with Brunson in foul trouble and not really hitting shots. DiVincenzo, who's their sixth man, came off the bench. He's probably better than everybody on Michigan with the exception of Wagner, and that's Villanova's sixth man. They have no seniors. Clearly, a couple of guys are going to leave, maybe three guys. But they do have recruits coming in, and they'll be very good again because DiVincenzo will probably likely move over to being a starter as Brunson moves on to the NBA. But crowd was good. Saturday night, the air came out of the building a little bit because Kansas was getting blown out, and that was the largest fan base in the building. As far as the Loyola Michigan game was concerned,
Sister Jean got out of there early.
Say that again.
Sister Jean got out of there early.
She did. Yeah, she
beating the traffic.
So, yeah. So, I would say that Loyola fans did a really nice job of showing up. It's a smaller school, but they did a nice job of showing up. Not as many as Michigan, but this to be expected. 44,000 undergrad with Michigan. The oddity of the fan bases were that there was a ton of Villanova students there on Monday night and very little in the way of Michigan fans, at least in the Michigan student section. Might have had to do with spring break or all that kind of stuff, Easter break or whatever. But the only thing I felt robbed of, obviously none of the three games were all that close. The only thing I felt robbed of was that the Loyola-Michigan game was shaping up to be a really good finish, and Loyola just ran out of gas. They turned the ball over six times in a row, starting at around the eight-minute mark of the second half, and once that stretch was over, Michigan had a nearly double-digit lead that they didn't relent. So we thought we could have had a close buzzer-beater, last-minute type of drama, and we didn't get that. But the fans in general were good. That's an old building, so you don't have a lot of amenities and that kind of stuff. Not that I need it, but it's a noticeably old building. San Antonio in general, I was with some people that really loved it. And it was like their favorite of the Final Fours that they've been to. They've done a tradition of going to the last five Final Fours. I've been to three. I've been to San Antonio. I've been to Houston. I've been to Atlanta. And when it goes back to Atlanta in a couple of years, I'll go to that one because I liked being in Atlanta. Atlanta's a cool city. If you're staying in downtown Atlanta, you can walk to the stadium. And that was what's good about San Antonio. You can. It's fairly walkable in the downtown area. I was staying a mile away from the Alamo Dome, and I could walk there. I could go to the Riverwalk. The Riverwalk is very touristy. I just warn everybody that has or has not been there. It's very touristy. So when the games let out on Saturday night, it was a mob scene. But it's nice to have good weather for the Final Four. I'll say that, Kevin.
Before we go to the, I know we got to get to all this baseball, but if we could put a
don't worry about it. We got 3 hours.
Yeah, that's true.
We can talk March Madness for the first segment.
I was curious if you kind of had maybe one final takeaway from the whole tournament, even maybe the whole college basketball season as a whole. Because for me, if I had one, it might just be, and I think this is fair. I feel like Jay Wright is now the best head coach in college basketball and has put Villanova on another level. And that's not to say that they are on a level above Duke, but now I think that, you know, they sit comfortably up top there with all of those blue bloods. And I feel like that's because Jay Wright, to me right now, is the best coach in college hoops.
Yeah, you have to do in a very specific time frame. Like right now, they are amongst the elite. You can't put them in the same category historically as Duke, right, and Kentucky and UCLA and Kansas even. But right now they're the best program out there. You could only really put probably Duke and North Carolina and Kentucky up there with them. Virginia's got to win something. They got to get to a Final Four before we start putting accolades on them. How did Villanova lose four games this year? I have no idea. I just don't know. I mean, they won 11 in a row to end the season, obviously. They won both of their tournaments that they were in. That's
one of them was the St.
John's.
That's
like nine games right there. I know. And St. John's stinks. But, look, I think it's obvious everybody has bad nights. The fact that nobody's been undefeated in this sport since 1976 says a lot. Not the UNLV team, not the Kentucky team. This UVA team loses to a 16 seed. Like, you can just have bad nights and the shots don't fall, and you lose on buzzer beaters and all that kind of stuff. I had a lot of fun with this tournament. It was crazy. Brackets got blown up. actually had, I didn't get in the money, but I had surprisingly good results in a couple of my brackets. I had a Villanova winner bracket. I had a Kansas winner bracket that came in like third. Kansas had won that game, I would have been in the money. So it didn't happen. I didn't expect it to happen going into the game. So
you have a final event, takeaway from this whole tournament? Because it does feel like it was one of the wilder, even as a whole, college basketball seasons.
Yeah, I think you could pull up some stats that would prove that there are other tournaments that were as volatile, talking about seeds. But I think there's just a larger trend that the tournament is going to be, has always been, historically volatile, but not as regularly volatile as it is now because of players. I'm not just saying one and done because that's an overused term. There's not that many players doing it. But because of the rate of players leaving for the NBA early, whether it's 1 or 2 or 3 years, and the enormous rate of players transferring from schools. There's 800 players that transferred last year. That's a lot. I mean, think how many rosters that is. You know, do a 12-man basketball roster of 8, you know, put that into 800. You have 60, what is that? I'll do the math right now. I have a calculator in front of me. 800. Let's do divided by, should we do it divided by 12? Because that's
phone
the scholarships.
Calculator, right? Like, not an actual 60. Old calculator, right?
It's like an old, like, yeah, it's like
old,
an old.
Why do you have an old calculator handy?
It's. I sit at my desk. It's a desk. I'm an adult. I have a calculator here. Is that weird? I'm on a sports show where I'm figuring out stats all the time, and I don't want to leave dead air while I'm trying to figure it out in my head. I'm pretty good at math, but I you have to understand that there's a dynamic where I'm trying to push the show along, and I don't want to stop to do math. So anyway, 800 players divided by 12, you know, 12 play, you know, 12 players per team. That's 66 entire teams transferring every year out of the 350 plus. So think about that. That creates a dynamic where coaches moving, players moving to gain chemistry on a particular team from November when they start playing through April is really hard. So that's why I think you see some volatility and players and teams getting better near the end, i.e. Michigan, or teams falling apart at the end, i.e. Oklahoma and Arizona State. I think that's why you see that. And you can prove to me that you can probably prove through statistics that the tournament has been similarly volatile in years past, but I think it's going to be regularly more volatile because of this. It's not a brand new trend, but it's a trend right now, and it's not stopping until they change some rules. So I had fun with this tournament. I know some people are like, oh, my bracket was done after Friday. I'm like, all right. If it was less volatile, you just would have been tied with 15 people going into the Final Four and then lost anyway. Like, just have fun with it. You know, that's what I try to do. I fill out a bunch of brackets. I don't think I'm a genius. I sat here on air. I did the show with Craig Carton and Gabe and Blackjack Fletcher and Greg Sussman, and we had fun with a two-hour show. All of our brackets got blown up. I had a Purdue-Virginia final, but at the same time, I did have Michigan and Kansas in the Final Four. So I
mean, even to be
is
fair,
that terrible?
Didn't one of those guys on the show, I think maybe you said it was Blackjack Fletcher, have Arizona winning the whole thing? And that's someone who is pinned as somewhat of an expert at this. I mean, as a casual...
Yeah, he is a handicapping expert.
As a casual viewer... If your bracket got blown, it probably should have, especially this year where you had a 16 seed win a game. You had an 11 seed in the Final Four. You had, I mean, Michigan, who went to the championship, I think the highest seed they even played was a 6. I just think for those people who get so caught up in, oh, my bracket's busted, I can't watch this. No, that's far too silly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a regret because I had Loyola in the Sweet 16 in the show that we did on the air. I had them going to the Elite Eight in a different bracket. Is I actually felt pretty good about them. Now, I'm not patting myself on the back because they won. You got to keep in mind, they won their first 3 games by 4 points.
Just think about the very first game.
Buzzer beaters.
The very first game was a buzzer beater. So it's just, it's this team that went to the Final Four and was picked by a lot of people to be an upset. They went on this, you know, miracle of a run. If that shot bounces left, they're out. Round one.
The most miraculous shot of the tournament was which one? Just to illustrate how crazy this thing can be. I know it off the top of my head. The most miraculous shot of the entire tournament to win a game was Jordan Poole beating Houston with a weird leg kick three-pointer that went in after Houston missed three of four free throws.
Think about that,
in the final minute.
Again,
and
like, that's
a miraculous second round. Right. That's a miraculous second round victory. And they got to the finals, and they were winning for about 12 minutes. So anyway, it's fun. I enjoy college basketball. If you get irritated by the upsets and all that volatility, so be it. I think in the end, three of the final four teams weren't eyebrow raising at all. You would have liked those final four games to be closer. Trust me, I was there and I saw three average games. And that was that. So, I'm glad we talked about that, though. It was a fun experience. I like San Antonio. I think other cities will be better, but the weather is a factor.
Where
when
is
it's
next
in
year?
Minneapolis. When it's in Minneapolis next year, it could be 40 degrees, and that isn't fun for walking around. You know, San Antonio has like open containers, so people walk up and down. People walk up and down the Riverwalk and drinking beers and having a lot of good times. You know, it's fun for a lot of people. So good stuff. That was my San Antonio trip. We are going to talk baseball. It was a wild day yesterday. The Yankees had a crazy game. The Brewers, a crazy game. Shohei Ohtani. It's not stopping, folks. Hits a bomb yesterday. So we'll talk about him, recap those MLB games, and talk about today's games in this hour before we talk about the NFL in the next hour. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today. We'll be back.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today, Mike Blue and Kevin Walsh here until 12. Tell you how you can listen to us. I'm sure you're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio app, but if not, I hope you're listening on TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. Appreciate you listening. Thanks for joining us this morning on your Saturday morning. Hopefully it's nice where you are, not so nice where Kevin and I are. But hit us up on Twitter today, at FNTSY Radio. Going to have a poll going a little bit later. I'm at Mike Blewett. Kevin is at The Kevin Walsh. And if you want to give us a call, do so. 844-843-6879. We're going to have a guest later, Joe Lisi, of our show, College Football Today. He and I are going to be doing a mock draft special on Wednesday. It'll be airing live on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, all that good kind of stuff. It'll air on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin, you don't know this yet, but you're going to be participating by having the final selection of the mock draft. We've been doing it online here the last couple of days, and I'm going to let you pick the Eagles pick because you're a diehard Eagles fan, and I'm good like that.
Wow, what an honor. This is amazing. Yeah. I love mock drafts as well. So this is overall the best day of my life.
So what's going to be weird about it is that we're not doing trades because it could just get a little wild there, you know, and people get a little too in the weeds on, oh, did you get enough value for that trade? I'm like, dude, I'm not a real GM, so just back off. I know what teams generally should be getting, but I don't want to get into the trades because it can get crazy. And I actually do think this draft is going to be particularly nuts with trades. Like, people are just biding their time. Giants, Colts, Browns, all those Bills, all those teams that are Cardinals that are looking to move up or move back. It's going to get pretty crazy. Yeah, it just because the QB run will be legit. So what was fun about ours is you can look at a lot of experts' drafts, and they will be talking about, and I will get to baseball in a minute. I just want to preview this mock draft special. They will be trying to predict who the Browns will take or who the Giants will take, et cetera, et cetera. We're going with the players that we think the team should take. Okay. So, needless to say, the beginning of this draft is going to be different than the one you will see in a couple of weeks. I started it off with a QB, You'll have to tune in to find out who that was. But after that, you don't see the immediate run on QBs, which will be kind of fun. And you can see how the draft would play out if teams just kind of took the best player.
You guys are 31 deep, though. You've gone through the first 31 picks.
No. You're not up yet. We're at the Seahawks right now. And Tony Sincotta has contributed, and Gabe Morency has contributed, and Emory Hunt has contributed. So we'll probably get to you, I would guess, sometime over the weekend. And you'll have an opportunity to pick for the Eagles at number 32. But
Gabe Morency was saying very, very, very mean things about Conor McGregor during a commercial, and I was very unhappy about it.
So are you a UFC guy?
Yes.
Okay. So I would call myself casual UFC, but I do follow it, and I do watch some of it. It has taken me a while to get to this point, but I am interested in it. I can't say watch every UFC main event, but I do watch them, and I heard what Gabe's comments were about Connor, and he and Cam Stewart as well. I like those guys a lot, and I've been on their show. I can't say I disagree with them. What Connor did yesterday, or 2 days ago, I guess, was cowardly. And it was a criminal act, and there's not really anything else you can say about it. Many, many people think it was a UFC stunt. I actually think this was Connor coming unglued a little bit, and it screwed up three of the fights. Now, I think that they're going to cash in more in the long run because of this, but that is extremely reckless. He really could have hurt someone, and he obviously took out
The whole backstory to it, right?
Yeah, he and Khabib I'm going to screw this one up. I have to look at it to pronounce it. Can you get it off the top of your head, the spelling of his last name?
I can't. I know it's Khabib. I call him Khabib the Baby because that's how
it's Khabib Nurmagomedov. I think that's it. Anyway, he and Khabib has a beef with Lobov. Is that Artem. Right? Artem Lobov. That's Connor's teammate. And they got into a scuffle where Nurmagomedov, I'm just going to call him Khabib from here on out. I'm actually pretty good with names normally, but that's a tough one. Khabib sort of accosted Lobov in the fighter's hotel, and he had a whole crew with him. Lobov was by himself. And Connor didn't appreciate it and found out about it because Lobov felt like he was trying to be intimidated and accosted by this group. And Connor didn't appreciate it. Then goes down with his crew into the tunnel of the Barclays Center where there's a media event going down, and he picks up a guardrail and basically throws it through the window where he knows Khabib, and he had to know other fighters and even media people were on it. So that's what happened. Glass shatters, gets into the eyes of one of the fighters, on the face of one of the other fighters. Neither of them can fight now, so it effectively canceled two fights after they're already having an issue with one fight because of drug tests and injuries and weight issues, correct?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I would love to say, right, if we're going to call what Connor did cowardly, then Khabib going up with a gang of his goons and pressing Artem Lobov is the same thing. And they continuously said to him, where's Connor, where's Connor? So they were asking for it, right? Now, yeah. There is no defense.
But they didn't fight him.
No.
They didn't throw anything at him. They didn't injure him.
Right. There is no defense for putting uninvolved parties in danger. What happened to Michael Chiesa is horrible, and whatever he sues Connor for is absolutely deserved, and there is no doubt about that. But the actual premise of the actions, I do not agree to be cowardly, because he felt that not only was a person who he's extremely close with, I'm a massive Conor McGregor fan, so some people might take that as bias, but it's also, I do follow the camp closely. Artem might as well be a brother to him, and he feels as if he was pressed, and the question was, where's Conor? He is now here. Now, they are lunatics, and they went crazy throwing guardrails and trash cans and things of that nature, but he was also shouting, come out here, Khabib. He's calling for Khabib. Now,
he's got to fight tonight.
But
Khabib, he's going to go fight a
did you
street
watch the
fight
UFC
with Conor
embedded?
McGregor?
Did you watch the UFC embedded? Khabib comes off the bus after they were being escorted, saying, Connor, just tell me where. Just tell me where. He told you right there to come out, and that wasn't going to happen. Ultimately, also the idea that
Kevin,
Khabib
that's not a realistic challenge. Khabib has a sanctioned fight on Saturday night that he's going to make prize money for. He's not going to jeopardize that entire thing. Maybe he can do it next week.
But then why would he do what he did to Artem and ask, where's Connor? He already put it in jeopardy by trying to be the tough guy.
I can't disagree with that point. I can't. You know, he intimidated the other guy, but again,
both parties did stupid things. Connor's far more stupid. But to me, the opinion that it is cowardly, I cannot agree with. More so, too, the point that Khabib would rip Connor's head off and smash it amongst the ground, I would not agree with at all.
Connor, I don't think I would agree with that either.
If they fight, Connor will sleep him within two rounds. No doubt about it.
I don't disagree with. Yeah, I think suggesting that Khabib would dispatch of Connor quickly, I don't see that happening at all. But in any event, they could both take an L on this one, but what Connor did was just over the top nuts. There's people that aren't involved in fighting on that bus.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's intimidating an entire group of people. There's UFC media members that had glass shattered on them. You know, Chiesa is sitting there minding his own business, being like, this guy's crazy. And he probably wasn't even looking when that happened. He picked up stuff and threw it at the bus.
I'd recommend for anyone who's even remotely interested in this whole process, actually just watch. It's the first like 3 or 4 minutes of the most recent UFC Embedded, where they had incredible footage of the whole thing. Chiesa's reaction, he almost thinks that it's like a fan because he can't believe it. And then they're like, that's McGregor's guy. He's like, what is wrong with him? He sat there. Yeah. You could see the cut on his head. And the thing, too, it was almost like it was a mobster hit. It was insane because after it all happened, McGregor's calling out shots. He's telling them to throw. He's saying smash the windows. He's running away going, yahoo. It's maniac stuff. It's absolute maniac stuff. But I will say the reason why people look at this and think maybe this is a UFC conspiracy. Ultimately, that's nonsense. Like the UFC had troubles getting UFC approved in New York. To have this type of stuff happen in New York, Connor may never even be able to fight in New York again. No, that is not worth that risk. However, part of the reason why people will think that is because now, assuming Khabib gets the job done tonight against Ally Quetta, you're probably going to have the biggest UFC fight in the history of the UFC, and it might take place in either Ireland or Russia. Now, that honestly will be very, very dangerous in the stands between Russian fans and Ireland fans.
They have to put that one in Vegas.
They're dying, though, to sell out the big events in either Ireland or Russia. Probably it would be in Vegas. They're going to flirt with the idea. Ultimately, it's probably better off to be in Vegas for safety purposes.
They could put that thing in a football arena, honestly, in the States and sell it out.
Oh, yeah.
They could.
Well, that's the thing, and that's part of the reason why people do sometimes think that this stuff is staged, because the result... And the immediate stuff is how it messes up with the card and the backlash and the fact that your biggest superstar just had to post bail. But the long-term reaction is you now, all things work out for Khabib and he's able to beat Ally Quetta tonight and then stay healthy in the build-up because we know he has an injury history. You probably have the biggest fight in the history of the UFC on your hands. And that's why people go, this has to be staged because in the long run, this works out too well.
Yeah, Ally Quinta is a local guy, too. Mm-hmm. I live in Long Island, and he is from Long Island, born in Wantagh, lives apparently still in Nassau County or Suffolk County. So it's funny. I go to a deli where the owner is a guy that trains, but he knows like Chris Weidman and Ally Quinta personally. Mm-hmm. So when I go to this deli, there's pictures up on the wall of these guys. So that's my familiarity with them. Obviously, I've seen them fight and wish them well, but obviously Ally Quinta is the underdog tonight.
Well,
so
I just want to quickly say, Ally Quinta fights in that same camp that Weidman is in and also Matt Serra. And Matt Serra, very famous for the upset of GSP. Weidman, famous for when he beat Silva. So there's some people saying, like, maybe it's the juice in the camp. Like, because if Ally Quetta does win this, it is one of the biggest upsets in UFC's history. It truly is.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody's got a shot. That's why they play the game, so to speak. Just ask UMBC. But, you know, we don't talk. People haven't heard me talk much in the way of UFC, but, you know, we're changing things up a little bit. We're talking about a few more sports, so it's good to have a voice like Kevin's that knows even more than I do about it to kind of round it out. Connor is a wildly entertaining guy, but that's over the line. Stunt, no stunt, whatever. He just can't be doing that kind of stuff. And as Kevin rightly pointed out, to do that in New York, which is a place that had a long history of not wanting this sport to be around, he could jeopardize main events. I'll tell you, when Connor fought at MSG, it was about a year ago. I think it was about a year ago when Connor fought at MSG. There was tons of people around. Like, there was a lot of people that came in from Ireland to watch that fight, and it was a very sought-after ticket. Having big prize fights, whether it's boxing or MMA, in Madison Square Garden is an atmosphere unlike any other. I've been to a prize fight in Vegas, and I've been to some pretty cool events in MSG. In MSG, I'm obviously not all that impartial, but it is one of a kind. It's really cool, and there's a main event type of thing going on there, whether it's fighting, basketball, hockey, whatever.
Even before it was approved for UFC to come to New York, back when McGregor and Aldo were doing their press tours, they made a stop in New York because they know how much the people here were dying for it. This has been a place that has wanted UFC, and it's gotten UFC. And to even further that point, part of the reason that Conor flew in was obviously because the Khabib stuff. That's why he brought as many people with him as he did. But also, the UFC was planning on announcing a deal that they were supposed to be finalizing for Conor McGregor's next fight contract, to the point where they were so confident that this thing was going to get done. When Tony Ferguson originally got hurt, they thought on it, not long, but they thought of actually taking Khabib off the card and just having the next fight be McGregor versus Khabib. Ultimately, had they gone that route, maybe it's a little less chaotic, but then the buildup isn't as crazy. My point is, this is a major hurdle that the UFC will have to get over. And again, in the long run, you probably did produce, again, all things permitting, the biggest fight in your company's history. But I don't know if that's worth it, because McGregor could fight Khabib without all of this nonsense, and it would still be one of the bigger draws in your company's history.
It could have been in New York, and it won't be there now. I think that's the one thing we can make certain. I don't think Dana White's going to want to deal with the fallout in New York and having to deal with negative press leading up to the fight. Like, hey, remember those guys that committed an assault a couple of months ago? They're just going to fight in Madison Square Garden now. Like, that's a tough sell.
I'll tell you,
it's probably got to be in Vegas. And you don't want to put it in either one of those countries, because I think that's probably a little too volatile.
No, I agree. I think that would honestly be a legitimately dangerous situation. I will say that Conor McGregor's ride, I mean, when you're in the middle of it, I guess it's hard to imagine something being greater than, like, in terms of just the media buzz that it captures and just the overall wildness of the journey that he has been on. But I mean, this isn't even the first time where he has had to be. I mean, this is a different type of fine. But the whole situation where he's throwing monster cans at Diaz's camp while there are fans in the arena and things of that nature during a press conference. I mean, this is someone who acts first, then deals with the consequences. And
yeah, he's a bulletproof guy right now. He thinks he's bulletproof, so he kind of does what he wants. And to this point, on this rocket ship of a ride of his career, which will come to an end relatively soon. I mean, it's just how the MMA is. It hasn't negatively impacted him. This could be the first one that's tough for him. So
he seems to be, like, walking, living proof that there no press is bad press. Because all of this stuff, does seem to elevate his star. I mean, again, it's for the wrong reasons, but he is now national news, and I don't mean by ESPN or Fox Sports. This morning, he was on the CBS Morning News that my mother was watching while in court. And again, it's not a great look, but then it turns people to his name, and there will be some people who will look at the backstory and become fans of it. And guess what? The way this works is there will be people who will hate it, and they'll try to tune in to hope that he gets knocked out. And ultimately, whether you tune in to watch him lose or tune in to watch him win, you're tuning in, and it just grows his star. And again, that is why I understand that people could look at it on its face and be like, oh, it has to be a publicity stunt, because ultimately they're getting press out of it, and people are going to continue to gravitate towards this guy, whether it be for positive or negative feelings. But it's not, it's just kind of the nature of this beast.
I think he's lucky in some ways to have avoided any kind of... His bail is relatively low. He's allowed to leave the country. That's the bottom line. That could have gone a different way.
Yeah.
But I think people know him not to be a particular flight risk, and he'll come back to see his day in court in June, I think, in a couple of months. So we are going to talk baseball, I promise. It's me and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today talking baseball right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Bob O'Reilly getting me fired up on this Saturday morning. Good to have you folks with us on Fantasy Sports Today. You know, you can dominate DraftKings and FanDuel Major League Baseball contests this summer with Daily Roto's MLB Projections and Optimizer. Just go to dailyroto.com/premium and save 10% with the promo code FNTSY to use all the same tools and projections that have produced 4 millionaire winners and millions more in total winnings than that. So head over to dailyroto.com/premium, save 10% with the promo code FNTSY, and see the results for yourself. Good guys over there, Drew Dinkmeyer, Mike Leone, and on and on and on. They'll get you in the winning column. So, baseball. Watched a bunch of the Yanks last night, but it went 14 innings, so wasn't going to see the end of that. A lot of crazy stuff in that game last night. You had one of the weirdest base running plays. I mean, look, I'm in my mid-40s. I've watched a ton of baseball in my life, and it's still kind of funny that you're like, you know what? I've never seen that happen before, and that happened last night. There was a run. Giancarlo Stanton got caught in a rundown between third and home. I think after Gary Sanchez single, right? And then Sanchez advances all the way to third as Stanton gets caught in the rundown. As he comes into third, the Orioles catcher, Caleb Joseph, wisely does not tag Stanton. And Stanton keeps running past third base and basically overruns third base and peels off towards the coach's box. Joseph rightly tag Sanchez, despite him standing on third base, then runs over, tag Stanton, and immediately holds up two fingers saying double play. The umpires confer. They say Sanchez is safely standing on the bag, but Stanton's out because you tagged him and he ran out of baseline. It didn't matter at that point. But they were wrong, and they admitted they were wrong after the game, because by Stanton overrunning third base, that effectively puts Sanchez in front of him in the base paths. So Sanchez is out because he overran Stanton, and then Stanton is out because he got tagged out. And it was a weird play, and I didn't know what was happening in the moment. I was trying to figure out why are the Orioles and Buck Showalter so adamant about it. But they said they worked on this in spring training, and they were right. Michael Kay, the Yankees TV announcer, play-by-play announcer, read the rules on the spot. And I knew it immediately that the Orioles were right, and it's amazing that they were right because I did not see that in the moment. And the umpires admitted they were wrong. That should have been a double play. Didn't really matter too much because Ronald Torres grounded out the next play, but a very weird play.
I missed that one. Did you see the play at the plate with
Didi?
Yes,
that was the second weird thing. The Yankees, that was the 10th inning, I believe.
I think so. 10th or 11th.
Yeah, Michael Givens. He, in the 10th inning, he comes on. He strikes out Gardner, Judge, and Stanton in the bottom of the 10th. Then in the 11th, with Didi Gregorius on third, my favorite Yankee, by the way. He uncorks a wild pitch, and it ricochets off the backstop, and Caleb Joseph corrals it and tosses really a perfect strike to Michael Givens, the pitcher, who is racing towards home. He perfectly blocks the plate, catches it, tags Didi, and people are like, wait a second, you can't block the plate. As it turns out, you can, because he's not a catcher. And if you block the plate in that instance as a pitcher, they will not overrule it for blocking the plate or whatever. First of all, he's in the line of getting the throw, so that's not illegal. And secondly, he's not a catcher, so those catcher rules are effectively eliminated.
The heads up, the headiness, I think, is that the way to put it? He took the perfect angle, and it was kind of frustrating because, honestly, if you take that angle, balls on time, Didi had no chance. His hand never even touched the plate.
Touch the plate. He was fully tagged out, not even on the plate. Kind of crazy. But Didi hesitated, A, and B, he slid head first
into the pitcher,
which is a terrible, terrible idea. I know guys are feeling bolder about it now because catchers can't block the plate the way they used to. But the Yankees had two guys like injured last night, basically. Well, who was it? It was CeCe walked off the mound. Mm-hmm. Then Chapman was getting looked at for injury. Who's the other one that I missed?
Well, then I know Sanchez left with a cramp. I mean, it's just a cramp. But I think and Drury left the game as well, shaken up. Yeah. I don't even remember what it was. They were showing, it almost looked like he got sick. So I guess that's four? Wonderful.
Awesome.
Off to a hot start.
So I went back and forth.
Health.
I was back and forth between the Yanks and the Masters, trying to watch Masters coverage. So. I was in and out on it a little bit, but I locked in on a few innings there. And the Chapman thing was just like, you gotta be kidding me. Like it was just so frustrating. He ended up staying in the game and striking out the final batter, but I just couldn't believe that he was going to go down again. So anyway, Didi, please don't slide head first into home plate. Cause that could have been a disaster. That could have been an elbow, hand,
shoulder
injury.
He did look a little shaken
injury.
Up even after.
Yeah. So, just go in, spikes up. I mean, I don't care. Just put it on the other guy to make the play. You know, like you guys are going to be a little bit more hesitant to block the plate if you're coming in spikes first, correct?
Yeah. And I mean, ultimately, they're putting you at risk by blocking that way. So it's not as if it's a bad guy move to go spikes up. It's what's puts you in the safest position, ultimately.
Quid pro quo, my friend. If you're going to come in blocking plates, I'm coming in spikes up. So tit for tat.
Something's got to give.
That's the way I see it. And I don't think it's a dirty play by any stretch of the imagination. So in general, yeah, Yanks, you know, I think we kind of know what this Yankees team is going to be. You're going to have some wild games like that. And Aaron Judge robbed a home run in that game. It's going to be a fun team to watch. The Yankees are a traveling circus again, filled with good players.
10-day DL for CeCe just came. I believe it just came out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like a huge thing. It's probably two starts at most that he'll miss. But
yeah. What is it? A back issue?
It's a hip.
Okay.
Right hip strain.
Yeah. Look, he's 37. How old is he? 37. I always get CeCe's age mixed up. He's 37-year-old pitcher carrying 300 pounds. Like, you're going to just deal with this kind of stuff.
He'll be 38 in July.
Yeah. I got his age right, at least. So you're just going to be dealing with that kind of stuff. And he was excellent last year. He's not an ace anymore, but he's figured it out how to pitch. And I like having him on the team. He's not a huge financial gamble, but you have to know that you can't really count on him in the way that you used to. So you're going to deal with injuries and that kind of stuff. By the way, guess the rest of the day, we're going to have Joe Lisi on at 10 o'clock. So in about 15 minutes, we're going to talk NFL draft prospects with Joe Lisi. And then at 11:40, our final segment, Tony Cincotta, who hosts, is on various shows on this network, including Talking Trash, which is 6 to 7:30, I believe, each and every morning. He'll be on to talk about all this kind of stuff that we're talking about today. He's doing well in a Masters DFS tournament. He's going to talk a little bit about UFC because he thinks Connor is looking at a suspension. So we'll ask him about that and obviously the baseball games of the day. So just wanted to remind people of that. So beyond that, all right, O's, Yankees, close the book on that one. Another wild game yesterday was Angels, A's. And obviously a guy that's trying to take MLB by storm is Shohei Ohtani. And he hits a home run for his third game in a row. And last night's was a no-doubter. The A's were up 6-0 going into the bottom of the second, and the Angels come all the way back to beat them 13-9, and Shohei Ohtani's bomb was part of the reason. Justin Upton hit one last night as well, but Ohtani with a 449-foot home run, Kev.
I honestly do think that the Ohtani stuff is going to be a gigantic story all year, like not just for fantasy purposes, right? Because everybody's figuring out like how much value do I get out of a guy who's going to hit and pitch all of that stuff, but ultimately this could be a guy, and not trying to be dramatic or over-exaggerate here, but he could really change the shape of baseball, not drastically to where this becomes where every team has a Shohei Ohtani type. But I think back just to last year's MLB draft where Hunter Green, who went first for the Reds, is a guy who can throw, I think he's like 98 miles per hour, but he's also, they said, as a fielder, as a shortstop, he could be a five-tool prospect. So I think this is honestly an incredibly important thing to follow for baseball as a whole. I mean, ultimately, it's insane. Like, I go to his game log, and I have his first game as a pitcher. It doesn't even have on ESPN.com, and it doesn't even have what he's doing as a hitter, because again, it's such a rare thing. And last night's home run, I mean, it's a gorgeous swing he's got. He put it pretty much, it was opposite center field. I think it was 460. He hit it maybe 459, something along that those lines. Yeah. I mean, it was an absolute bomb. He's three homers in a row. It is a gigantic storyline to follow. If this guy is able to give you, I mean, trying to be my 30 home runs and a sub four. I mean, his ERA, you know, he gave up, what, three earned in the first game? I mean, if his ERA is sub four, I mean, that's incredible stuff.
Yeah, I heard Tony and the crew talking about Ohtani a couple of days ago. Tony thinks his batting average will suffer long term, but that he can put up a whole bunch of homers. Now, his international stardom is an important component of this because he will be popular outside of the United States. The problem is baseball, I don't think anybody can argue this, has become fairly regionalized, very regionalized, and there aren't a lot of people that are casual baseball fans that could pick Mike Trout out of a lineup. So I don't know that I can expect Eagles them to can. Know who Shohei Ohtani is. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. you know what I mean? Like a buddy of mine sent a funny text last year. He's like, one of the problems with baseball is that the best guy in the sport wouldn't be recognized with people if he delivered a pizza to your house. And I've seen local talk shows and late night talk shows do bits with Matt Harvey and other players, like in a park in New York City. You're like, hey, do you know who Matt Harvey is? And people are like, nah, never heard of him. It's Matt Harvey doing the interview. So I've seen bits like that. I think baseball just struggles with that a little or a lot, depending on your opinion.
I think
opinion.
They did one of those with Cano, and he was there for like a decade.
Yeah, they might have. But that proves my point. So, yeah, Shohei Ohtani will help to put another star on the map. But in a lot of instances, and I'm not saying anything that's controversial, I think baseball struggles a little bit with the fact that some of their biggest stars are international players.
I think
and
that
don't speak English, and I think some it creates some complication for the casual fan, but. That's just my opinion. I don't think that should be the case, but I think it does create a language barrier, creates a little bit more of a stardom barrier, if that's fair to say.
No, I think that's totally fair. And I think that his impact may be less about taking baseball's popularity to another level and more so just kind of the shape of the game. And I go back to what I just said about Hunter Green and, you know, more, I mean, realistically, if you go to any local high school game, you will probably have the team's ace on at least one team in a league is also their best hitter. So you might have a scenario where now, as opposed to guys being told that they have to choose, they actually feel like there could be a long game, and if they're good enough, it's actually plausible for them to pitch once every 5 days and DH three out of the other days of the week. It's actually something that could be in place. So I think that might be more so the Ohtani thing. Because ultimately, though, if he craps out, right? If the average completely dips and then he can never seem to get into a rhythm pitching, it could take it completely off the table.
And here's what I think. I think the fact that he did come from an international league and was effectively a free agent, he was a free agent, and didn't have to go through the draft process, increased his chances of this happening. He also took way less money than he could have if he just came over here 2 years later. I still don't understand that, but whatever. He's eager to get here.
Here's why. He's trying to hit 450-foot bombs.
Yeah, but he's cost himself a lot of money by doing it that way. In any event, I don't think, you mentioned Hunter Green, that teams that are drafting players and taking them through their system are going to want to deal with this, because it likely increases a chance of injury with players to either your star pitcher, if he's going to go that route, or to your star hitter going out with an arm injury. I think teams have way too much data on injuries. Major League Baseball pitchers get hurt at an extremely high rate, and I don't think teams are going to want to deal with their investments that way.
I would.
Does that make sense?
No. I totally agree. But would you agree, at least though, if, let's say, Ohtani has an incredible year? I'm trying to like put it in a, I don't want to say he's like in an MVP race, but let's just say Ohtani has a really, really strong year. I think it would.
Wins double digit games. Yeah. Hits 20 homers.
Sure.
That's real super impressive.
It would open, I think, teams up to the possibility to where now, I mean, on draft night, the Reds made the declaration Hunter Green is a pitcher, right?
Yeah.
To where now, if Ohtani is successful enough, maybe there's a case where it's like, you know what? The kid is a five-tool prospect. Let's just see what happens. Because ultimately, it's not as if the Reds are a team that's in the position to where, you know, they can't try different things out. I agree with you as well, because they invest so much in a guy like Hunter Green. I mean, the Angels did get Ohtani fairly cheap. He wasn't the first overall draft pick. So that plays a role in it as well. But I think that it could open teams up. Ultimately, 30 teams, probably 25 don't even consider it. But those five teams that maybe do in over the next 5 years, and then maybe over 10 years, eight teams are thinking about it.
I think it went from 0% to north of 0%. So I'll give you that. The door is open now, obviously, because somebody is doing it. So I'll say that. I'll just recap one other game, because I read an interesting article about the burgeoning rivalry between the Brewers and the Cubs. And Joe Madden is quoted saying, very often people try to contrive these rivalries, but this one is growing a little bit more naturally. Two cities that are 90 miles apart. There's been some disagreements in the past between the two teams, particularly last year, and now they're battling out some interesting games. So 5-4 win for the Brewers yesterday. Star of the show, we had Thames with a couple of RBI game. He hit a homer, and Travis Shaw hit a homer as well. So a little power burst there for those guys, Thames and Shaw. Outside of that, win goes to... Yeah, and late in the game, Matt Albers ends up with the win. He throws two scoreless innings. On the Cubs side of things, heroes are, I think, Javi Baez had like a little league homer, got hit in the head, running around the bases, and then scampered all the way back home. So we'll do a little bit more baseball later in the show. We got Joe Lisi coming up from College Football Today. We'll talk about him and the NFL draft prospects that are being crammed down our throats, and how can we sift through it in the next segment. Join us in hour number two on Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Mike Blewett and Kevin Walsh. We'll be back.